All right, welcome to a special episode of Piecing It Together, the podcast where we take a look at a new movie and try to figure out what movies inspired it. And today on the show, we are doing one of our director follow-up interview episodes. We've only gotten to do a few of these over the last couple of years, but I always really enjoy doing it. And I'm always happy for the opportunity to talk to one of the filmmakers who made one of the movies we talked about and see how we did as far as trying to figure out these influences and puzzle pieces and all that. And it's always hard to tell what we're going to get. But today we are talking to Bob Byington, who wrote and directed Francis Ferguson, a movie that we covered here on the show a few weeks ago and a movie that I loved. It's one of my favorite movies of the year so far. And so we get into a really great conversation. We talk about Francis Ferguson, some of Bob's other films as well. And it's just a really cool conversation that dives into some of these pieces and to some of the actual inspirations that Bob had in mind while making these kinds of movies. So before we jump into that conversation, I want to remind you, as always, to make sure you're subscribed to Piecing It Together on your podcast app of choice. You can rate and review us over on Apple Podcasts or Podchaser, and follow us on social media at Piecing Pod. So I think without any further ado, let's get into this interview with Bob Byington. All right, so joining me today, I've got filmmaker Bob Byington, whose film Francis Ferguson we just covered on the show a couple weeks back. And Bob, thank you so much for joining me.
My pleasure.
As I'm sure you've heard on the episode, I really love this movie, and I was really glad that you were down to do this little interview. We're going to talk about some of the puzzle pieces we discussed on the main episode, but I also want to, you know, just get a chance to talk to you a little bit. I have a few questions along the way that I wanted to ask. But first of all, we're a little confused or wondering about the release of this movie because, you know, it hit a lot of festivals last year, won an award or two, I think. Then I saw some press about it possibly opening in November on Amazon Prime, but then it's listed as a 2020 release. I just found out about it in March. When did this actually hit Prime?
It may have hit in 2019. I think we wanted it to look fresh and new, so we may have changed it to 2020. So hopefully Bezos doesn't find out.
It was something that like popped up as a new release, and I was like, oh, this looks good. And I honestly hadn't seen your previous work, and now I have, and you know, I really love a lot of what I've seen, and I was glad that I discovered it. But you know, jumping into look at that guy. Wait, what's this guy's name?
Bender.
Has Bender been in any of your films yet?
No.
Okay. Well, jumping into just a couple of questions I wanted to ask before we jump into some puzzle pieces. One of the other films of yours that I watched, Registered Sex Offender, also kind of deals with this, you know, it's a very different movie, but, you know, kind of within the same realm. Was that something that you planned to, like, kind of go into this world again of these kinds of characters?
Yeah, I'm interested in the rehabilitation comedy, and we had made that film many years ago, and we wanted to try a different spin with the hot teacher model.
Yeah.
And the comedy of the, I just thought it was ripe for, it just seems obvious to me that you would make a comedy about the hot teacher sex offender. it's a no-brainer.
Yeah, it really does seem like it, and it's interesting that other filmmakers haven't gone there or explored this kind of a story. And you know, I think that's part of what makes this so fresh and so interesting is that it's just something you really haven't seen, you know.
Yeah.
One other thing I wanted to ask before we jump into this, you know, obviously we've seen versions of this that have happened, but, you know, there is like the little title card, you know, based on actual events. I was wondering, you know, without any specifics or anything, how much of this came about, you know, I don't know about in like in an improv kind of way, but like from the characters that you had written, and how much of it came from any kind of like true story?
Well, we had done a lot of research on these cases, and I worked with a writer who did comprehensive research. So she's sort of an amalgamation of a few teachers. And you may know the New York Post does a lot of stories on the teachers. And that was really the thing that the main inspiration was all the New York Post articles.
Right, right. And then I assume that the character probably changed a bunch once you found Kaylee Willis.
Yeah, Kaylee and I developed her together. So
yeah,
she and I had been working on something and we just moved the character to this teacher. And it just kind of, it made sense to me. I'm not sure it made 100% sense to her, but she got the hang of it. And I like how it turned out.
For sure, for sure. Well, let's jump into some of these puzzle pieces, which the first one I wanted to bring up is the Jody Hill comedy Observe and Report, which really just goes to really uncomfortable places with the comedy. And are you a fan of Jody Hill's work? And what did you think of this as a puzzle piece?
Yeah, I like Jody. I had met him in Vegas in 2009, and he's an interesting guy. I know that what he wants to do with, like he's siding down and stuff like that is, yeah, it's a neighbor in a community of the type of comedy I like to do.
Mm-hmm.
He's very smart. An influence? No.
Not so much.
No.
Okay. What about another one we had mentioned, fellow Austin filmmaker Richard Linklater in the film Bernie? I just thought kind of the weird small town and all these you know, odd characters, and we spent a little bit of time with each one along the way, getting to learn about them just a little bit, but more so about their reaction to what happened with the central character.
Yeah, again, hats off to, I consider Linklater to be an actual genius. I don't throw that word around. And he's just been a huge inspiration to me. Again, with that movie, he's looking to do something really specific with somebody like Jack Black and to a lesser extent Shirley MacLaine that is different from what I'm doing, for sure.
Right. Yeah, no, and definitely you know, with your movie with Frances Ferguson, I mean, the exploration of this kind of character is definitely a different thing. But more so about the kind of just the weird small town feel.
Oh yeah, and I love that, and the interviews. You know, if I were in a different setting, we might have tried to make a film where we interviewed people in the town. And I think that's a great idea for a movie like this.
For sure.
And, you know, we might have made an 80-minute movie or 85-minute movie if we'd done that. And again, hats off to that kind of filmmaking. I like the idea of you, like, giving all these films to me and then me just shooting all of them down.
It's interesting. Yeah. I mean, you absolutely never know. You never know what's going through the mind when creating these things. And, you know, obviously there is something within this kind of a character that you're looking to explore, first and foremost, more so than, you know, trying to go somewhere that has been gone before. I mean, this is clearly a very different kind of a story.
I think one of the inspirations was how uninterested Kaylee was in most of what I said. And I think that the character came out of that, like my fear of being ignored by her generation.
Mm.
You know, she's the character's accused of this kind of flat affect and this kind of bored kind of quality. And I think that came from my own fear of her being bored by most of what I said to her.
Well, in that case, because Seven Chinese Brothers, which I really loved as well. I mean, Jason Schwartzman's character also kind of has, you know, a bit of a, I don't know, almost like a contempt for everyone and everything around him. And
yeah,
it's similar.
That's different. Jason was not bored by, did a really good job of not acting like he was bored by what I said. He's also like a genuinely kind person,
mm-hmm.
almost to the detriment of that film and that character. He's really not like Larry at all.
Hmm.
And he's not a loser. He's a high functioning, ambitious, constructive person in real life. So, you know, we might have benefited from someone who seems more like a loser. We had Patton Oswalt involved with that project for a while, and Patton Oswalt's a comedic juggernaut, but probably seems more like a loser than Jason Schwartzman, right?
Yeah, I suppose.
I mean, his comedy is kind of rueful, and he sort of makes fun of himself in a way that is maybe more fitted to that idea.
It's interesting to hear you say that about Schwartzman, because, I mean, you know, as an outsider just watching, he seems so great in the role. But, you know, clearly a certain thing you're going for that it's like you maybe don't, you know, can't disconnect the actor himself from it.
Yeah, well, when you're on set and you're working, well, Jason is kind of like, he's almost like a prince in real life. And so he's putting on a certain amount of anger and dejectedness in the role.
Mm-hmm.
And he doesn't really have that dejectedness in real life.
Right, exactly. Well, you know, back on Francis Ferguson and what you were saying about Kaylee, we also had Daria and Beavis and Butthead, the MTV animated series, as possible puzzle pieces. I mean, those, you know, clearly probably not actual inspirations for you, but as far as the character is concerned, kind of seem to come from a similar place of bored by everything around them.
Right, right. Again, Mike Judge and Austin, legend, and
sure,
have a lot of respect for him. I don't know that Beavis and Butthead impacted Francis Ferguson in a one-to-one way. I really like people like, you know, I've worked with Stephen Root and Martin Starr and people from Mike's universe, and wish I could pull off the kind of world that he creates in Silicon Valley.
Oh, for sure.
But again, probably no, Beavis and Butthead not an inspiration for this.
Well, that's an interesting thing. Real quick before I move on to the next one, I mean, you're bringing up Silicon Valley.
I'm excited when you hit one. You know, when you hit one, it's going to be like the mother love.
Yeah, we're going to kill it, I'm sure. I'm sure. but a quick question, is TV something that interests you? Like you mentioned Silicon Valley as a series. Is like creating a bigger world like that goes on?
Yeah, I was going to do that before the pandemic hit. I was going to try TV and that fell apart.
Mm.
So I think it has me retreating back to just making another little movie.
I feel like everything's falling apart, but, you know, that's another conversation.
Yes, it is.
So another piece that we had mentioned on the show is David Fincher's Fight Club and the idea of just deciding to go to bottom to start over.
Mm, that's nice. Yeah, Fincher's a big figure for me. I like watching his films just because everything seems carefully thought out. He doesn't want to waste my time.
Sure.
He's also famous for saying all people are perverts. And I think there's a perversion to his work that I respond to. He takes it, you know, he doesn't think it's a big deal that people are perverts. And I think that Francis Ferguson has as a starting point, like, of course, people are perverts. Let's not pretend otherwise. And,
sure.
I think Fincher's impacted me in that regard.
That's interesting. I mean, I do think that not only is a, you know, a very real thing about the movie, but then also there's so much comedy around it as well. Just the fact that, you know, she ends up interacting with so many people who have various pasts that dealt with these kinds of issues.
Yeah. Well, when you have to rehab for something like this, you tend to get put into group environments that aren't that thrilling. And one of the comedy, you know, one of the things about the movie that's comedic is kind of watching her navigate that environment.
Sure.
You kind of get in there and you're like, I hope I'm not like these people. And I don't know. I kind of want her in making the film. I kind of want her to get in that environment and start to see similarities and not differences, you know, and that's part of the path she's on.
Yeah, for sure. And I mean, the path it goes in a, I don't know, it's like a mostly positive, hopeful direction, I think, as she's navigating this.
Yeah, it's supposed to be.
Yeah. So another one that was kind of, I think, an obvious, like both my co-hosts for the episode, Chad and I both said it immediately, was the Gus Van Sant film To Die For, which, I mean, you know, again, there's not a lot of movies that deal with these kinds of, I don't know if you call it a relationship necessarily, but this kind of a relationship between a student and a teacher. And so what did you think about that one as a piece?
Yeah, I like that movie. And I've seen it a few times. And I know it caught me off guard. I had seen his other work. And Mala Noche was a big film for me. And I've seen Drugstore Cowboy 25 times.
Sure.
To Die For was, yeah, it's just raucous, good fun. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I think it also helps that, you know, as a gay man, he's looking at a heterosexual relationship. And so it's almost like a science experiment for him to make a movie about a teacher sleeping with a student. He's not, I don't know, he's not heterosexually titillated by the idea of sleeping with his hot teacher.
Right.
He's probably titillated by a young Joaquin Phoenix. And so the movie wants to fuck Joaquin Phoenix in a way that works.
For sure.
Can I say that? Can I say the movie wants to fuck Joaquin Phoenix?
I mean, I don't have any objection to it. Okay. And, you know, I think there'll be a lot of people who agree.
It's supposed to. I mean, for the movie to work, it's supposed to. And I wasn't attracted to Joaquin Phoenix in that movie, but darn near. he's really quite something.
Absolutely. So one last one I'll bring up, and then you know, we'll see if you have any like specific you know, influences that maybe we missed or anything like that. But
we do have some of those. I'm happy to report.
Yeah, I am sure. But that last one I'm going to bring up, and we had a bunch more on the episode, but I'm not going to go down to every single one of them. But that's the Netflix series Orange Is the New Black, which
never,
you know,
seen it.
Yeah. So there you go. It's definitely not inspiration in that sense.
Well, she looks like Taylor Schilling, and that's not lost on me. I'm not a complete moron, but I was dating someone who was doing some ironing one time, and we had Orange Is the New Black on.
Okay.
But that show is not, I'm not the target demographic for that show.
For sure.
I don't know who is. I mean,
I fell off after one season or two seasons.
Not attacking that show either, but I really like Natasha Lyonne, and I didn't even know she was on that show.
Yeah, she's good in it. Very good.
If I could just watch her scenes, I would watch Orange Is the New Black.
There you go. There's, you know, I'm sure Netflix is working on that feature right now. anything to keep us glued in.
Why not just do like a release a Natasha Lyonne sizzle reel from Orange Is the New Black?
There you go.
23 minutes.
The Natasha Lyonne cut, as it were.
Yeah. And watching her, you know, we had made the film, but watching Natasha Lyonne in Russian Doll, that's the type of performance I'm so attracted to. I love her, you know, presence on screen. She's so alert and funny, and just really turned on by that type of work.
Right on.
I thought that show was astonishing when she was on screen and deeply unwatchable when she was off screen.
So, obviously, we're not exactly nailing these things here. What are some influences specifically with this project that you had in mind?
Well, I've said this in other interviews. I'm always kind of trying to make an Aki Kaurismäki movie. I don't know if you know this guy. He's a Finnish director. He made this thing called the Proletariat Trilogy in the late 80s and early 90s. And I think I'm always trying to make an Aki Kaurismäki movie.
So that's more on like the overall career arc, like a lot of your films.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably the single biggest influence on me. His humor, he makes 70-minute movies, which I like 70-minute movies, and he's very spare and dry.
Yeah.
And I just think that I saw his work at a time when I was young enough that it really absorbed in me, and I'm just trying to make Match Factory Girl. I'm just trying to make, he made a movie called Ariel that I love. And I think I'm just trying to make those movies.
Interesting. Yeah. Any others specifically on Francis Ferguson?
Well, I'm a big Wong Kar-wai guy. I really like Chungking Express. I think that the last 60 minutes of Chungking Express, I'm always trying to make that movie.
So
basically, Match Factory Girl and Chungking Express, even though the first 40 minutes of Chungking Express doesn't work for me at all. He introduces a new story 40 minutes in, and that's the part that I think is astoundingly great.
So with the reaction to the movie so far, has there been any from, you know, any of the critical reception? I don't know if you read reviews or any of that, but has any of it connected on those influences that you're aiming for?
No.
No. It's interesting.
I would say no, of course not, but... Kaurismäki is a sort of more well-known for a film he made called La Vida Boheme. And he's known for his more recent work. But these films have sort of been lost in a way where they're not very well-known. I mean, I think they're known to film fans and cinephiles, but he's sort of gotten lost a little bit.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's part of the goal of the show here is to, you know, connect the dots. If you like this movie, go check those out, you know, that kind of a thing.
Right.
So I'm glad you're bringing them up for sure.
Yeah. I think he's got Match Factory Girl is on Criterion, and it's a flat, stone-cold masterpiece. It's 68 minutes long.
Awesome. I did want to bring up one scene from the movie real quick that I just thought was so funny. It's one of the first arguments between Frances and her husband, and you know, she's like, she's four, and husband's, no, she's three, you're three. I was wondering, is that something that came from any kind of a personal experience? Because it's just so funny.
Well, that was not in the script. We started doing that scene, and that came out of an improvisation where one of us, I mean, I've worked a lot with Keith, who plays the husband, so somebody got the idea to say you're three. I would take credit for it, but I know if I did that Kaylee would probably remind me that she came up with it.
Sure.
She was really good at that type of material, like just in the scene coming up with something like that. I know that when Keith says, what is your deal to her, that's just something he said during the scene that was funny.
That's great. Would you want to work with her again?
Kaylee, sure.
For sure. And one other question regard to what you were just saying there. Is improv a part of your films normally?
Well, we had David Krumholtz, the group therapy leader, and he's very good at improvisation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could just bring him in without a script and get good material. We worked with him in a way where I wanted him to know the material for the scene. But the way that he sort of fundamentally made it his, you cannot tell the difference between when he's giving a scripted line and an improvised line.
Right.
I mean, I kind of can, but it's not performance-based. It's just because I know the script. But he's very talented at a sort of seamless mix of scripted and improvised material.
Hmm.
And some actors are like that. Not very many, but some are. And then some are really good at giving scripted material, and some hate improvising, and it's case by case.
Sure.
Kaylee was good at improvising, but didn't really want to do it. She wanted to work with scripted material.
Okay. And then one other thing I wanted to ask about was the her little internal scream that she would let out every so often. Where did the idea for that come from?
I'm sort of drawing a blank. I know that it's an homage to the gulping that Dustin Hoffman does in The Graduate.
Huh.
We actually had a lot more of it in the cut. There were like five of them, and I think we cut it back to two or three.
Mm-hmm.
But I think she did that once when we were rehearsing for something we were going to do before Frances Ferguson, and that it made its way into the movie because I thought it was really funny when she did it.
Yeah.
But we had one that we cut that I kind of wish we hadn't cut.
Yeah.
She screams when during the online divorce, the Zoom divorce.
Mm.
That I guess would be the norm now, the Zoom divorce.
Sure, yeah.
But we had one in the cut right up to the end that we cut right before we finished the edit.
Gotcha.
But I don't know. I mean, I don't know if we're going to have these like diehard fans of the movie. I know that we have some people who really like the movie,
mm-hmm.
and that's great. But I tend to dwell on the things about the movie that I wish worked better. And bringing up Bernie is a good example.
Yeah.
You know, there's a part of me that wishes we had taken advantage of the town and mm-hmm. interviewing some of them, and we just didn't do it.
Huh. Yeah, no, I could see where you would want to, branch out into more of those characters and how they, you know, how more people from that little town react to her and to what she did.
Well, we screwed up, see?
Nah. Well, I mean, clearly there's people like me out there who love this movie as is. But
it's funny, and I'm gratified that you liked it, but there's a part of me that still just, I don't really believe that you liked it. You know, that's just... that's director low self-esteem, I guess.
is it that way with other films as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Seven Chinese Brothers, which if you want to watch that together sometime, we could accumulate hundreds of errors that we made that I could point out to you.
That's funny, because I like that almost as much as I like Frances Ferguson.
Yeah.
What are you working on now? Like, I'm assuming that you must have things that you are trying to hopefully get back to once this is all over.
Yeah, I wrote a new script that's kind of a companion piece to a film we made 10 years ago called Somebody Up There Likes Me. And in some ways, Frances Ferguson is a, you know, like you said, a companion piece to RSO. And I wrote a new script with a lot of the people that we've worked with in the past in mind.
So great.
I hope we get to make it.
Yeah, I hope so too. I hope people get to make things soon. That would be nice.
Have you seen Greener Grass yet?
I haven't, no.
It's a movie that impacted me. I finished Frances Ferguson. It was on the festival circuit with us. And I just think that group is very talented and like to work with them.
So okay.
Sort of interesting steps in that direction.
I'll have to take a look for that. So I was actually just about to ask you, I always ask my guests for a recommendation of something that they've watched recently. So I guess that works for that, unless you have another one you want to throw out there.
Well, I would be too embarrassed to say what I've been watching. I mean, it's not porn or anything, but I've been watching Billy on the Street on Netflix.
Mm.
And I had tried to watch Billy on the Street a few years ago and kind of thought it was dumb. And then there's something about it being on Netflix where you can watch it kind of seamlessly. And
sure.
I just think it's really good. I think he's like a dyed-in-the-wool surrealist. Like, he is the genuine article. He's got this surrealistic sensibility that I think lines up with even someone like Louis Buñuel, who I adore. Hmm. And I think the show is really well written, even though it doesn't seem like it is.
Huh.
And I've been really impressed with it.
Interesting. Yeah. No, I certainly know of the show, but haven't watched it. So maybe I'll check it out.
Well, if you can kind of get into a groove with it, it's definitely uncomfortable. And he's genuinely rude to strangers, which is not, I don't know, not something I would recommend doing necessarily in New York. I wouldn't recommend going around being rude to people in New York, but it just works. So.
That's hilarious.
Yeah.
Well, right on, man. Bob, thank you so much for doing this.
Thank you.
I look forward to what you make next.
We're queer.
We're geeks.
We're queeks.
Superheroes, Star Wars,
Broadway, Drag Race.
So if you're super gay,
super nerdy,
or anything in between, listen to Queeks today.
Wherever fine podcasts are sold.
And find us on Instagram at Queeks Podcast.
All right, so I hope you enjoyed that conversation with Bob Byington about Frances Ferguson. If you haven't seen it, go out and seek this movie out. Like I said, I mean, we said it on the original episode, it's maybe not for everyone, but I loved this movie, and it's definitely one of my favorite of the year so far. It is on Amazon Prime, so go check it out. So that does it for today. As always, I want to remind you to please make sure you are subscribed to Piecing It Together in your podcast app of choice. And if you're enjoying the show, rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or on Podchaser. You can also follow us on social media at Piecing Pod and join our Facebook group Popcorn and Puzzle Pieces, where we continue the conversation about all of the movies we talk about on the show, as well as everything else going on in the world of movies. We have a whole lot of episodes coming your way in the next few weeks. We also have some advanced episodes available on our Patreon. You could always go sign up for that. And just lots happening on the show. Lots coming. We are in quarantine, but we are continuing to watch movies and cover movies. We got more missing pieces, more regular episodes, all kinds of stuff. So thank you, as always, for being out there listening. And thanks for Bob for coming to talk to us. That was awesome. So let's leave you guys with a piece of music, as we always do. And you know what? I think that I am going to give you guys a little preview of something new. How about that? This song does not have a title yet. It is one of the tracks I've been working on while I'm sitting here in quarantine, and it'll be on whatever the next album is that I put out. But yeah, this is an untitled new track that was made in April, and I don't know if it's 100% finished yet, but if it's not, it's pretty damn close. But enjoy this, whatever I end up calling it, and look forward to that whenever I do release it on whatever my next album is. And we'll be back with whatever the next episode is of Piecing It Together coming up real soon.
and all points west.